You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Hannah McLachlan. Only 18 years old when she made her Irish senior debut, Hannah is a senior international hockey player with Ireland. Hannah made it to the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games with the Irish team. Hannah graduated Economics and Finance from UCD with a first class honours under the Ad Astra Elite Sports Scholarship Programme. Sit back and enjoy the show. Hannah, thanks so much for joining me today. I am delighted to have you on. How's everything with you?
Thanks for having me. Things are good. We're on a bit of a training break from our national program for the summer, and we'll get back together at the end of August. And then there's a cohort of about 6 or 7 of us that have gotten professional contracts to move away across Belgium and the Netherlands. So there's kind of two different training groups going on, but it's the best thing for the program going forward, which is exciting.
It must be exciting getting that that move. Like you said, it was probably something that you kind of had in your mind for a while, was it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all of us would be lying if we said a dream wasn't to be, you know, a professional hockey player. And at the moment, that's just not possible at home in Ireland. So we have to go abroad to get that. And there's a group of us that are going next season. As I said, a good few of the more experienced girls have played away after the World Cup in 2018. So it's been an opportunity that a lot of people have taken. And we all just want to become better hockey players. So it's the right step to do that.
Exciting times. I always ask my guests at the start, do you want to give us just an idea of what was your, I suppose, childhood like? Were you, like, you were probably made into sports and that kind of thing? What was it like growing up?
Yeah, you're dead right. Was mad into sports all through my early childhood. Like, as young as I can remember, horses would have been a huge part of that. I did show jumping and cross country up until about 14 or 15 years old. So that would have been the biggest part of my childhood, but played every sport under the sun throughout primary school, did swimming, gymnastics, which I was absolutely awful at, you know, mixed sports, rugby, football, everything. And hockey kind of only fell into my lap going into secondary school. I went to a school up the road from where I live. That was like a big, big hockey school, all girls school. And in first year, everyone played it. My mum had played it when she was young, but I'd never set my sights on it before that. So it kind of fell into my lap. And then I suppose I just fell in love with it, played it all throughout secondary school, played Leinster underage, Irish underage. And I think the big decision was, you know, as I said, horses was a big part of my childhood. So when I decided to put that on pause to kind of pursue the hockey when it got a little bit serious, that's when I knew that, you know, I really did have a love for the game.
I am. They used it there in school. I remember when I was in, it was, I suppose, the start of secondary school before my accident. There was they used to do floorball. It was kind of inside in the hall, but it was I don't know, was it similar to hockey or not? It's a different kind of setup, I presume. But like, I used to do that to get out of class. Were you I suppose academic? Did you enjoy the kind of other side of school away from the sports?
Yeah, I definitely did. As far as I can remember, I would have been a very competitive kid, and that can be in sport, in the classroom, away from both of them, no matter what it was. I always would have wanted to be doing my best. But I enjoyed school. I enjoyed my studies. It's been a huge part of my life. You know, I've never, as I said, I've never only played hockey by itself. I've always had something else going. So I think I'm someone that always needs to have kind of more than one avenue going. You know, the junior cert and the leaving cert would have been very, very important to me to do my best in, as well as sport. And I definitely think at different stages in my sporting career, I've prioritised my studies, and then in other stages I've prioritised sport. But I definitely think they go hand in hand, and it's important to have, you know, an outlet away from studies in sport or in music, in drama, in any activity. And it's also important to have another outlet away from sports, which would have been study for me.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's important to kind of find the balance between the kind of sport side of stuff and then inside the classroom. I suppose when you went on, you studied in UCD, I think you I was reading, but when you did go into UCD, did hockey kind of like, because obviously you went on, like obviously UCD is college is bigger and I suppose more time consuming than inside in secondary and primary school, but did you find it hard to kind of balance the hockey and the I suppose college life?
Definitely. Yeah, I suppose it's a different challenge to, say secondary school, because I think the way that you learn and the way you're taught are obviously very different. Then there's no one over your shoulder making sure that you go to class like there is in secondary school. So I definitely found that a big adjustment. But I actually went through UCD under the Alastra Sports Scholarship, which basically gave me extra, I suppose, assistance in my academic studies as well as my sport, if I needed to get kind of deadlines moved or exams moved if I was away. And all my lecturers were brilliant in terms of giving me flexibility when I needed it. But I did economics and finance in UCD, and the thing is, I really, really liked the course. I really enjoyed the content. There was never, a massive issue for me of not wanting to go to college. I had a small enough course of about 65, so I knew everyone in my course. So I loved going into college. So that was never an issue for me personally. But yeah, I definitely found it extremely challenging around exam time. So, coming up towards Christmas, we would have had like exams for semester one and then in May for semester two. And I think semester two would have always been a crunch point for me, because usually when we'd have an international tournament, it would be in the summer, and that could be June, July, or August. So I definitely found it a hard juggling act when, exams were coming in and training was ramping up to get the balance. And a lot of the times I didn't get the balance right at all. I think it's from trial and error over a few years that I kind of found what worked best for me. And then in my final year of study, I split my course over 2 years. So I slow tracked. So as opposed to doing six modules a semester, I did three, which was brilliant in my final year, which was
That was
very
handy,
full on from
wasn't
an academic. Yeah, well, looking back now, I don't think I would have been able to do like final year, which was definitely a lot more challenging than, my other years. A lot more group work, project work, which can be very time consuming. And especially if I was traveling away with the national team and we've group meetings, like I can't be there in person. And it's not the same over, Zoom or trying to get filled in after. So I definitely think having the ability to split those 2 years was brilliant for me. And I wasn't in a rush to start work, so I was happy to have the extra year in college. But I think everyone finds college challenging in a number of different ways.
and it's important, like we said there, to get the kind of balance right. And but the way you're
Yeah.
talking kind of sounds like I suppose they were kind of accommodating and flexible enough with your, I suppose, with the hockey side of things in college, were they?
They definitely were. I think one, because I was on that sports scholarship, when I spoke to lecturers and said I needed to move, I felt proud of that. I've come in and I've got my studies, but my sport is something that I take as seriously. So I was definitely looked after very well. But I think, I'm definitely a diligent person that, I would have been in lectures every week. So the lecturers would have known me as well. But also I was quite headstrong in how well I wanted to do in college and what modules I wanted to do. So I'd say I was quite firm with my college head and my various academic mentors that were brilliant to me, but I was very clear on what I needed. And I plan months ahead, saying, I'm going to be away in 8 weeks' time. Can you send me on XYZ? And I had brilliant friends that I'm very close with that gave me a lot of support when I wasn't in college, if I was traveling or things like that. But yeah, the extra support really did help make things a lot easier.
And like you said there, when you were showing up for the kind of classes and semesters, it looked good that you were making the effort, I suppose, to be there rather than like not showing up and just going to hockey. And like you said there, in school is kind of where you started. When you kind of went from, I suppose, the kind of club level to start off, I was reading you went to Avoca and Blackrock. Was that where you kind of started essentially?
Yeah, that's where it all started. So all of my, I the only reason I wanted to join this club that's only around the corner for me is because all my friends were there. So
Really?
I actually played 1 year in another club, which I ended up going back to, Colorado Hockey Club. And we only trained, I think, on a Friday evening, so once a week. And all my friends in my primary and secondary school would have been in Avoca, and the only difference at that age was they had like a skirt and a top and a proper uniform. whereas we just kind of wore like the same color t-shirts in the club I was playing in. And I remember we played against them, and just the fact that they were in a uniform, I was like, I want the uniform. I want to have, you know, a skirt and a top to put on to go out and play. And that, really, as bizarre as it is, was the reason why I initially wanted to move to Avoca. It was obviously only around the corner. A lot of my friends were there, and they had an unbelievable junior section in the club. I still think to the day their junior section is probably the best in Dublin, and a lot of other Irish nationals that I play with that were all spread across different clubs now all started in Avoca at different age groups, under kind of 14, under 12, under 16, which is mad. But yeah, it was an amazing club, an awful lot of volunteers and parents giving their time to, you know, come out and be a manager at the weekend or run the club, be on the committee, like things like that, that kind of make the club go around. But that's pretty much where it all started for me.
And there is a big commitment, like even obviously the players, but then the trainers, and like you said, there's volunteering and stuff. It's the same as every sport. Like it's a massive, I suppose, time consuming. Like you said, now moving abroad to carry on the hockey career, I suppose now when you're playing, like obviously you said, you have a break now, I think, from international level. What does it, I suppose, like when you are going, I suppose, full on, what's a kind of a training week like? Do you have like certain nights that you train, or is it kind of different every week?
Yeah, we'd have our kind of usual week would be full days on a Monday and Tuesday out in Sport Ireland in Blanchardstown. So Monday would usually be two pitch sessions, and then you'd have, you know, various meetings, and you might see the physio or the doctor, etc., throughout that day. So it would be the full day out there. And then on Tuesday, similar, we might get off a little bit earlier, but we would have pitch session. We have meetings in the morning, pitch session, and then a gym, and then you might also have conditioning or be in the heat chamber after the gym. So there are Monday, Tuesdays, which, unless we're away at a tournament or a friendly series, they would kind of be our staple. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday we would have as a rest day. Thursday we would be released to our clubs. We play with or have club training on a Thursday evening, and then a Friday morning we would have gym and a pitch session, club match Saturday, and then off on Sunday. But I suppose a lot of us would, so myself, I work part-time on a graduate program. A lot of the girls are still in college. So, you know, we're nearly hockey players Monday, Tuesday, and then you're either working or studying Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but you're playing hockey before or after that, so in the mornings and the evenings, and then you've your club match on a Saturday. So they're kind of our usual weeks, and we might have a training block of 6 to 12 weeks, depending on what we're trying to build up for, and then we would travel and play some friendly series or have tournaments, and then trying to match, you know, that schedule in with like the club schedule. We might have the odd week off, but that's kind of our usual weekly schedule. So it's busy.
It is fair. It is full on. And they said there's Sport Ireland out in that kind of facility. I'd be one of my good friends, you know, Jordan Lee, he's Paralympian. He does the high jump. I was talking to him even about it out there, like, and he said it's amazing. Like you said, you've the kind of the gym side, and you've the physio side, and everything. Have you seen since you started in hockey alone, Hannah, have you seen even that kind of facility? Have you seen kind of a gradual increase in, like, I suppose, like funding going into Irish teams, and like the facilities getting better, and the kind of progress in sports, and especially in women's sports? Because a lot of people that I interview, ladies, I always ask them, like, from when they started up until now, they always see kind of a gradual increase in being taken more seriously. Have you seen that kind of increase as well?
Definitely. As long as I've been in the senior program, you know, we've fully been centralized out in Sport Ireland, which wasn't always the case. So when I would have been, you know, going to Irish women's hockey games as a, you know, as a fan, as a spectator, they would have only trained maybe one Sunday a month, and then gone away on the odd training camp, and then just had a tournament a year, and they would have paid a levy to play. So they would have kind of had to fundraise within players. And when I look at what we have now, you know, we're out in Sport Ireland at least 2 days a week, and we've access to a hockey pitch, like our own changing rooms. There's a kitchen and a chef out there 2 days a week. We've the gym. We've, you know, an athlete changing village. We've physio support, nutrition support. We've doctors out there. So, you know, when you look at that, there's a huge contrast. So I think where we are now is getting closer to, you know, other teams abroad that we're trying to compete with. It's not to say it's perfect, and there's still a long way to go, but I definitely feel, you know, women's hockey in terms of the setup is a lot better than what it was. And we also have a lot of private sponsors. So Park Developments came on board a few years ago, and they've been a huge support to us as individual players, enabling us to only work 3 days a week and be able to, as I said, be a hockey player on a Monday and a Tuesday. So it's also like private players like that have had a huge impact on us as a squad and as a national program.
And rightly so, like, it's only right that you do get the same treatment as other people. I wanted to ask you, obviously, when people hear hockey, sometimes like I've watched like Tokyo when you were in the Olympics and other, you know, be on TV and stuff. But a lot of times when people hear hockey, they automatically think that it's ice hockey. Do you agree with that?
Sometimes it's funny because some people would say, oh, you know, what type of hockey? And it's obviously, you say, ice or field. And I find field hockey is quite like an American term, obviously. So like in Europe, hockey is only outfield hockey, really. Yeah. But there are a lot of people that, you know, when we travel and they say, oh, you know, what team are you guys? We're all away in our kit. And they would ask a lot, but it never ceases to surprise me that question's asked. But I suppose there is another sport in ice hockey, so it's also a fair enough question. It's just not maybe as prominent in Europe as it is, you know, in America and elsewhere.
It only came into my head when I was doing when I was prepping for the interview. Like, sometimes people would automatically go to ice hockey, but like you said, field hockey. Like, but it's amazing to know the way they would automatically think that it was ice hockey. Yeah. Do you know when you on your, I suppose, down days, like when you're not training or anything? I asked this Kieran Donaghy, the Kerry footballer, when I had him on my show. When he was off, he's a big basketball player, and he still plays basketball full on. And he said that basketball, it kind of goes, especially when he was full forward, like catching balls and they were going in. He said basketball, it went hand in hand with football. Do you think that there's any other sports or things that you could do that you do on your, I suppose, downtime, like anything to do, like golf or anything that kind of would help your hockey game?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And it's funny because golf would probably be the one that, as a team, we would joke and slag each other a lot about, because a lot of us would be, you know, golfers in the summer, but
I
not
see
so much in the winter.
McGuire, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah. So she brought me out onto a golf course last year, and then I obviously had to return the favour and bring her out onto a hockey pitch this year. But it's very transferable, you know, hand-eye coordination. The swing is obviously different, but like if you have a good golf swing, it gives you a good hockey base, and vice versa. And I know a lot of other hockey players that would be very, very good golfers. There's a few girls on our team that are very, very good. I'm not going to name them to give them the credit here now, because we do slack each other a lot. But yeah, definitely this summer, a lot of us would play golf together.
It's amazing the way they can go hand in hand with each other. Do you want to bring me back, I suppose, now to your, obviously, growing up from a younger age watching field hockey, your debut for Ireland when you kind of got called in? Do you think that the delayed Olympics when you were in kind of European competition, when that was delayed, do you think that kind of helped you get into the, I suppose, the senior setup on the Irish team?
It's funny, I had thought about that a lot, you know, when it happened. And I think the honest answer is I don't know, but I definitely think it probably did.
Yeah.
So in 2019, I would have been 19 when I formally got introduced as an athlete into the squad. I got my first cap in 2017 when I was still in school. And as I said earlier, kind of when you have those moments of prioritizing just different aspects of your life, in sixth year, I was definitely very clear that I was happy to come to training and do things where I could, but my leaving cert was the priority, because I did not want to have to repeat that. And I still stand by that decision today. So then I think after secondary school, coming into college was when I really tried to really get a foot into the squad. And that was kind of the end of 2019, as I mentioned, where I got named in like a training squad. And
What
then
was that
into
like?
2020, it was obviously an amazing moment in itself to, you know, get named in a training squad. But I think that feeling of, you know, excitement probably passed pretty quickly when it was straight on to the next thing. You know,
reality.
yes, brilliant, pat on the back, you've made it, but that's step one. You now need to, you know, play better than however many other people if you want to get into a match day squad, a starting 10, etc. So I definitely think there was a little bit of naivety in me as young as I was, but it was definitely an amazing moment for myself personally and for my parents to see that happen. Because, you know, if I hadn't got named, you know, it's kind of the step one that you can't jump straight to step two. So I think it was a huge start, but it definitely was a great introduction to high performance sport, that things move incredibly quickly and you're only as good as your last match, your last training session. That was the end of 2019. And then January 2020, we went to South Africa on a training trip and played Germany, South Africa, and one or two other teams. And when we came home from that, the team was cut to 23, and I made the 23,
was
which
that in
was
the back of
amazing.
Your head, Hannah, while you were over there, like, was that in the back
of course. Yeah, oh, we're, every player is so aware, especially coming into like an Olympic cycle or a year of a tournament, exactly how, you know, how the numbers work. And, you know, as a squad, and one thing that I think is brilliant is we're very open about that in advance. You know, but before we would have travelled, you would have known, right, we're home on, okay, January the 15th, and email's going out on the 17th at 8 a.m, and his name, our coach, is going to name 20 players or 23 players. So it's very clear what's happening, which I think is brilliant, because I think, you know, confusion is the worst feeling of all, because you can't do anything with it. So there's always great clarity around exactly what's going to happen over the next 2, 3, 4 months, which is brilliant. But that doesn't mean that it's not still in the back of your head when you're out playing a game, that, look, I need to perform here if I want to get into a 23. And I was very acutely aware of that. Because, you know, in a way, I didn't have a leg to stand on. I had no previous tournaments. I obviously had, I think, 2, maybe 3 caps at that stage. But I'd never competed in a major tournament. So I knew that I had to continually try to prove myself in those high pressure situations and environments.
When you did that, when you did go to Tokyo, Hannah, that must have been, I suppose, a huge achievement as well in itself. What was it like, I suppose, because you were probably so used to being at tournaments and at matches when there was hundreds of fans cheering and your, I suppose,
Yeah.
your family were there, and when you were over in Tokyo, then it was just kind of nearly an empty stadium. Like, that must have been very eerie, was it?
Yeah, it was just bizarre. You know, obviously we had won, a female sports team had never been to an Olympics before. So, you know, when we thought about doing, you know, our preparations, we didn't have other female teams to speak to about their experience in maybe Rio or in London. Like, there was nothing to go off, which I think in a way probably did help, because we had no expectations of what it should be like or what it could be like. We were just going on a blank canvas, and I definitely think it was easier being a team sport as opposed to an individual one, because obviously you have each other and you give each other energy and things like that. But it was very weird. You know, our first game we played South Africa, and I think it was 7:30 in the evening over there, and there's just the volunteers in the stadium, and that was it. So it was weird, but we were so focused on the game, you know, it didn't affect us, you know. And there's you know, big cameras everywhere and big screens, so you know that your family and friends are at home glued to the TV. I think it was probably more, I think, disappointment for friends and family that have, you know, some of the girls, it's their third Olympic cycle, so they've had parents sitting through watching this for the last 12 years, and when we finally make an Olympic Games, you know, that they didn't get to kind of reap the rewards of that. So yeah, it was weird, but I think as weird as it was still a very special tournament to be at the Olympics.
And it must have been, like you said, the parents at home, and it must have been hard, because would you agree that, like, parents and family in your success, even qualifying for the Olympic Center. Like when you were younger, they were dropping you to train and collecting you, and they were doing stuff all through from a young age up. Like how important were, I suppose, not just yourself, but all of the team and any athlete in Ireland, the Olympics, Paralympics, how much of a role do parents and family play, like from going up gradually from a young age up until now?
In my experience, it's been probably the biggest pillar that's supported my performance, and it's been there, I think, ever since I started playing hockey. I think between, you know, my mum and my dad, I think only three hockey games that one of them hasn't been at, and that's including, you know, club games, school games, senior games, Leinster games, friendlies on a Sunday, you know, matches at all hours in all parts of the country, that there's always been either my mum or my dad there. And sometimes you underestimate the impact that does have on you. And it's amazing that they've, you know, supported me, and I feel that I can make them very proud, and also give them the opportunity to travel around the world with, you know, a lot of other parents, which when you think about it is like a big holiday for them with all their friends. And there's sometimes 50 or 60 of them that get to go. We were in Tarrasa recently in June, and I'd say there was maybe 50 people in the crowd, all in green, and it's what's called a sea of green.
Yeah, there's a bit of sunshine as well in some places.
Exactly, yeah, and I think the Irish fans are known all across the world in every sport, and, you know, we're known to travel in numbers, and I think it's just a bit of an Irish cultural thing. But for me, on an individual level, my parents, I wouldn't be playing where I am now without them. You know, I still remember so vividly in secondary school in fifth year when I got asked to join the training program a little bit of the national team, and that was, you know, gym at 6 to 7 in UCD, and then I would have had applied maths from 7 to 8 before my normal day of secondary school. So my dad would have got up, brought me to the gym for 6 o'clock. My mum would have collected me with breakfast in the car to drop me to applied maths before school. Dad would have collected me after school to bring me to club training that evening. I'd be getting home at 9 o'clock. And it's only when I look back now, you know, I couldn't drive, and I would have been able to do those things so seamlessly. You know, being in a program can be, you know, stressful enough in terms of performance, and then trying to think about all the other things of getting, you know, nutrition, getting everywhere, mobility, things like that. So they've been a huge part of my journey, and I know, I'd say for a lot of the girls in the squad, they've been family members or very close friends that have definitely been huge advocates.
Absolutely, and like you said, missing matches like barely happens. Like even when I was playing hurling and football and rugby and stuff before my accident, like mine were just parents same as yours. They were at every game, and even when I had my accident, they were, when I was in hospital in Dublin for 9 months, like they were by my side. And it's only like now when you talk about it, you kind of look back and realize that they were such a big influence on you, and like how they stick by you. And do you have any friends from, I suppose, when you were maybe just at club level in Blackrock that you're went through the ranks with and that you're playing with now?
Yes, there's a few of us from different age groups, but Sarah Torrens, who I play with now on the national team and played with in Loretto, the club that I've just finished up with, and she's actually also, Sarah's also going to Belgium, to a different club than me,
really?
So we're playing against each other. But yeah, we played from under 16 Leinster all the way up. So under 16 Leinster, under 16 Ireland, under 18 Leinster, under 18 Ireland, under 21 Ireland into the senior squad. And we both got, as I said, in 2019, we both kind of got into the training squad again. She had been in a little bit more than I had before that, but both got in the end of 2019, and yeah, pretty much been stuck together ever since. And it's funny, we would often speak about teams when we were 14, 15, 16 of girls that you thought were, you know, unbelievable at the time, that for various different reasons didn't make it up through the age groups and through the ranks. So it's only the two of us from my first tournament that I'm still playing with now.
Like you said, you'll be rivals next year. Friends.
We certainly will be, yeah. There'll be no expenses spared now when we play each other.
Friends off the game and friends after then again.
Exactly,
put
yeah.
The friendship aside for a while. Before we came on, you're here, we were just talking about Paris, and obviously that was very disappointing for all the team, like not being able to qualify. How did that, I suppose? Because I was reading now. Did you go to Spain for your last qualifier? Was it?
Yeah, we were in Valencia in January.
What kind of I suppose the mood, obviously, not after qualifying, that must have been very hard. How did you I suppose as a group put that behind you and kind of move on to bigger, better things coming up next?
It's a funny one because I think it's probably never going to feel like it's, behind us as individuals. I think it's something that's probably going to stay with us as individual players and as athletes for an awfully long time, but as a squad, it did take a while. It was a unique year in the fact that we played our qualifiers in January in Valencia, and we had another tournament at the start of June in Spain again. So that was another kind of qualified tournament for like an international league, but we came home and it's just it's utter heartbreak. There's no pretty way to put it. The last 18 months pre that qualifier, everything was streamlined towards performing in this one tournament to get to an Olympic Games. It's such a tough tournament to actually qualify for. Every I was dotted, every T was crossed, every day as us as individual athletes, maybe 25 of us towards, and as a squad. So when your mind is so fine-tuned towards something for 18 months, it's hard to then to start to forget about that and realize that it's not going to become a reality. So I definitely think there was, a cooling off period when we came home, but we did come together as a squad a few weeks after we came back to kind of debrief the tournament and to kind of start that, I suppose, healing process, and to also acknowledge that we do have another tournament in June that we have to be ready for. It's a critical one for the program, but I think it's not to say that those feelings of disappointment and heartbreak have been left behind even today.
Obviously, yeah, it must be. But now you said in June you've another tournament to kind of look forward to and work towards as a team. Whenever I interview someone like in sports, like at a high level, I always ask them, how have you been lucky enough with your, I suppose, in your career so far with injuries?
I've been, I touch wood, extremely fortunate. I don't want to jinx it now, but have not had any serious muscular injuries. I've had a few like bangs. I've split my face open a few times, my head. I cracked a rib only back in May, but they've all kind of been impact injuries. So external, I haven't had any kind of very bad muscle tears or anything like that. I definitely would say some of that's just maybe genetics and a bit of luck, but I would be pretty diligent in, how I take care of my body, my nutrition, and all those other things. But I've been very lucky not to have to experience anything particularly serious.
You mentioned nutrition there, and obviously in Sport Ireland, you said that's another kind of factor that's very good there. How important is nutrition, obviously, when you're not training, when you're on a break? Obviously, sometimes it might be go to a movie and the bet you see sweets there, gonna have a few of them. But how
Yeah.
important is I suppose obviously when you are training and stuff, but when you're not
Yeah.
training, how important is it to kind of keep on track?
I think it's equally as important. We would always say that, a lot of your kind of physical and mental gains you get in a recovery state, not in an active state. So I definitely think when we've longer periods off, you can definitely be a little bit more relaxed and like everything, you need to do things in moderation. I don't think any of us would be encouraged to watch, exactly what we eat or track calories or anything like that. But we would definitely try and eat well, and trying to eat enough is probably the biggest challenge that a lot of us would have, especially when training ramps up. It's a case of a lot of us are not eating enough, as opposed to, eating the wrong foods and things like that. But I'd say we're all probably well trained to eat pretty well without recognizing it. But that's not to say that we don't go out and enjoy a nice meal or enjoy some sweets. A lot of us have a very big sweet tooth, but it's like everything, it's getting the balance right. And once you have kind of the big kind of pillars ticked off of eating enough of the right foods, the other things you can enjoy a little bit more.
Everything in moderation, and like you said, they're eating enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say, like, when they're when they're, say, trying to lose weight, oh, I'm not going to eat anything. And that can be nearly worse than eating too much, like, because you need obviously need to fuel your body. Last question before we finish. Whereabouts? Two questions in one, I'll say.
Yeah.
Whereabouts do you play your main home games at home? And if you had to pick, say, in even at home around the country or even abroad, a place that you have gone to play in a couple of times, where would be your favorite place to play a game of hockey, and where do you play at home?
So at home, our official national stadium is in UCD, so University College Dublin. But we haven't actually played there since maybe 2 years ago. So obviously now we're, as I said, we're based out in Sport Ireland in Blanchardstown, and we've hosted tournaments there, and the men have hosted tournaments there. So I think the plan, fingers crossed, is to kind of have a bit more of a long-term formal plan to host games and matches out in Blanchardstown. But we have played in UCD as well. And then to your second question, I would say that the most special place I've played in it is in Tokyo. You know, Japan was an amazing country in itself. We didn't get to see it a huge amount with COVID, but we were up in Iwate in kind of northern Japan in the holding camp, which was absolutely amazing, and then traveled down to the village, obviously in Tokyo. But I think that's probably the most special place that I've played. But hopefully there'll be a lot more cool places around the world to come.
Hopefully. And like you said, you didn't get sometimes it doesn't go your way, but then it can, like you said, you didn't qualify, but now you've the Belgium move, and it's mad how things kind of work out. We were saying
It is.
before we came on, Hannah. So come here, thanks so much for coming on tonight, and I really appreciate it, and all the best with the future, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you at the Olympics down the road again.
Thank you very much for having me, and yes, fingers crossed.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. If you have any suggestions, questions, or requests for next week's show, you can get in contact with me through my Instagram, enoconnell321. You can send me an email through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie, or you can send me a message on my Twitter, enoconnell00. Before we finish up, I want to say all the best to the Kerry senior team playing the weekend against Armagh. I know the lads have it in them, and they'll get us over the line, please God. And Kerry can look forward to another All-Ireland final, hopefully. So all the best to the senior team and the Kerry footballers and all the management and backroom staff as well. We've the county behind us, and you can tune in as always to Radio Kerry on the day when the game is on, because Tim and Ambrose will be doing commentary on Radio Kerry. So tune in to them like I always do. If I'm not at the game, I throw the match on the telly, and I throw the volume down, and I throw on Tim and Ambrose on the radio, and sync them into the same time as the game on the telly. So all the best to the senior team and to all the management and backroom staff. I hope you're all having a great week so far. Stay tuned in here to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.